You're listening to the Winning Teams Podcast, presented by Jet Dental, the premier pop-up dental clinic for workplaces nationwide. Now, here's your host, Jordan Smith.
Hey, everyone, and thanks for joining us on the Winning Teams Podcast. Today, we're excited to be joined by Chris Crumpler, a.k.a. Coach Crump. And Coach Crump has over 17 years of experience building and empowering leaders, students, and entrepreneurs. He's an author, professional speaker, educator, and coach, well known for his unique approach to storytelling and connecting to the hearts of the people he serves. Chris, we're really excited to have you join the show today.
Hey, thanks, Joel, for having me, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about the winning teams that you're building across the country.
Yeah, I'm actually a part of JAG, Jeremy Anderson Group. I'm an executive consultant and lead director of the Speakers Academy and Speakers Elite program. We have speakers all over the world, thousands of speakers in our community, and over 100 in our inner circle. And actually, I got to go to New York this Saturday to open up a chapter there because we have chapters in New York, Dallas, Atlanta, Chicago, and now New York, and eventually LA and Orlando. And so I manage the director over those teams. I manage the community. I manage our coaches within the community. And I'm just grateful, man, because all journeys have kind of led me here. And now we really are not just doing business and making growth and getting revenue goals, but also making incredible impact by helping people speak life and hope to people, right? So it's a very rewarding work, and I'm grateful.
Yeah, I love that. Chris, I when you and I first connected, I was really excited to have you on the show because you're very optimistic and very hopeful. And I can tell you you're full of energy. And you have a really interesting background and story growing up.
Yeah.
And I thought it'd be great to talk a little bit about that journey and how it's made you a better leader now.
Yeah, well, I always, when I do some certain presentations, I say, listen, my mother put me up for adoption because I was black, right? And so here she is in Tupelo, Mississippi. It's taboo for back in the 70s for this race to get with that race. And so she moved to Florida to appease her parents and got with her white husband at the time. And so they go to the hospital and out comes me, right? And so I'm up for adoption and she's up for divorce. And the road kind of goes from there where my dad, who adopted me, his sister ran the orphanage, and he was seeing her for family reunion that she couldn't attend because she was at work. And lo and behold, there's a baby crying in the back, all sweaty, no AC, in Florida, in the summertime. And my dad had like a guilt trip at 46 years old after raising six kids with a third grade education and a sharecropper, decides to adopt me. And he's the wisest man I've ever met. And it kind of gave me that DNA. So when you say I'm optimistic, when you say that I still believe no matter what your circumstances, that your condition won't be your conclusion, I lived that, right? And so, and my dad and my mom, they did a great job of laying a strong foundation of wholesome values for me, but also just personal fortitude, mental toughness that allowed me to kind of persevere through some challenging times. And that led me to traveling over 30 countries. That led me to get a college basketball scholarship, and that led me to all the other goals and accomplishments that I've achieved over my professional career.
I love that. Awesome. Really, really cool story of resilience. We're at my company, Jet Dental. One of our values is relentless. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we first chatted, I thought, man, this guy's relentless. I love his approach. You mentioned basketball and your scholarship there. You also played for the Bermuda national team, correct?
That's correct. 12 years.
Awesome. Well, our podcast obviously is called Winning Teams, and I love sports. March Madness is happening right now as we're recording this. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what you learned playing with very competitive teams and for the Bermuda national team. You know, what did you learn from a winning basketball team that you've taken with you now as a professional coach and a leader?
Yeah, one of the things that I learned early with my high school team, when we was 500, that talent's not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, talent's not enough. Everybody wanting to do something's not enough. You got to have buy-in, right? You got to have buy-in to the concept of we all want the same result. When I got to college, was the first time I've experienced that. We was top 10 in the country all four years that I was there, we won two conference championships. And from, I remember missing one defense assignment that the player didn't make the shot. And I didn't get cussed out by the coaches. I got cussed out by Ben Kersenbrock and Chase Tremont at half court at a timeout. And they subbed me out. Bo Clark was old school for freshmen, so you made one mistake, you got subbed out the rest of the half. But it held me accountability. That was the first time that I had held accountable for my behavior as it relates to the team's ultimate goal, right? And I always tell people, man, you can have a great coach when it comes to playing anything or doing anything, but it's the players that's going to kind of maintain the container of the culture and at a culture of we win here. We behave a certain way here. Like when the coaches leave, the murmuring that happens behind his back, when the leader leaves, like the murmuring between the employees and the staff and the teammates, that's the secret sauce to your company. That's the secret sauce to your team. And so when I went to Bermuda, I'm this hotshot American that's coming on the team that found a Bermudian wife. And I mean, practice was hard. What I learned in college was practice was harder than the games. Mm. So I'm not only going at the guys in practice, I'm calling out their name. I'm telling them I'm going to beat them. There's nothing going to, I tell people all the time, I come from a Michael Jordan era. I don't come from a LeBron and James era. So I don't have no special handshake for not one of my teammates. My only handshake is if you don't do your job, you're going to find out that I'm a different type of Christian. That's all I can tell you. You better do your job. So for me, I took that same mentality, you know, like no matter what, it starts in practice. We don't cut corners in practice. I don't ease up on practice. I actually make the players make it more intense than the coach sometimes. Like he don't even have to say anything because I demand that we win. And so that led to me being a captain. We won 3 gold medals. I was able to win a couple of MVPs. And I'm grateful, man, because we've made history for that small island.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love what you said about accountability, and not just from the leader, but with your team, right? That peer accountability is really where it's at. Yeah. Tell me about maybe some of the best teammates you've ever had, both basketball and also in your career.
Yeah, one man that stands out to me off the top is Chase Tremont. He was really good because even though he had his flaws, he was adamant about not just trying to do well himself. I had players who worked hard and players who went after each other. But he was big on, we got to win. You got to do your part. And then second is Sullivan Phillips. Sullivan Phillips was a pro. He was a man's man, and he demanded that we play together. So he was big in timeouts and challenges. The crowd is really loud. You could barely hear the coaches saying, I'm just grabbing guys by the jersey. And I was on that energy. I'm gonna grab a teammate guy, right? So I kind of go into that mode of, hey, guys, we got to lock in. We got to be focused. We got to, you know, kind of put out distractions. So Chase and Sullivan Phillips, man, those guys embodied not just them working hard and them getting their success, but they spoke out. They did things to make sure the team was actually doing what it was supposed to do, both in games and in practice.
I love that. All of us, need great teammates throughout our life. Yeah. And also great coaches. And you go by Coach Crump a lot. So obviously coaching is important to you. Yeah. Tell me about the role of coaching in leadership and some of the key takeaways you have for leaders on how they can implement coaching more into their day-to-day with people on their team.
Yeah, and I'm grateful. I saw a hardworking coach in Bo Clark. I saw a strategy coach in Coach Roderick. I saw a personal development coach in Eric Thomas, who's one of my mentors. And then I just studied them and studied who they studied. Type of deal, right? Mm. And so one particular person I studied was Eric Thomas, who studied John Maxwell, who studied John Wooden, who studied his dad, who studied Jesus Christ, right? It's like I went all the way back to like, what was the original source of why you guys operate the way you operate? How come everybody is successful under you when you operate? And in doing that, I'm in a space where I'm working with Jeremy Anderson, and everybody's kind of successful, right? Multi-millionaires. And in your mind, you think they're one way until you live and operate with them. And all these guys got coaches, and all these guys got like mentors, and all these guys invest thousands of dollars a month on coaching. And you realize that what makes them great is that LeBron James puts $1 million a year into his body, into his coaches, right? Denzel Washington has an acting coach. You know, the best artists have a vocal coach. It's like, you would think once you make to a certain level, you make a certain level of success, that people be like, you know, I've arrived, I'm good. It's blowing my mind how much they invest. And then the people that don't have success, how much they don't invest in themselves. There's a quote about, if you want to be successful, work on yourself more than you work on your job. It's like you when you start pouring into yourself, your work becomes easy. And so I just try to set reminders, put structure. You know, I tell people, you get coaches for three reasons. You get coaching for your blind spots, your sore spots, and your dark spots. So when I come in as a coach, I'm looking at your six. I'm looking at what you don't see. When I come in as your coach, I'm looking at the sore spots. You know what's there, but it hurts to touch. The sensitive stuff that the elephant's always been in the room, but nobody wants to address it. And I'm also going to coach you in your dark spots. Those demons you're hiding in your closet that you don't want your people in your personal circle to find out about, that's actually affecting the way that your mental bandwidth and emotional fortitude that you're showing up to the workplace with. And so for me, as I come in from a coach, I'm all inclusive and holistic in my approach, because it's sometimes things that's not seen that's holding us back as an organization.
Yeah, we were talking prior to the show, speaking of coaching, just about how as a coach for leaders, you are constantly challenging them to kind of improve. You know, the entire organization improves when the leader improves, right? And so one question that came to mind when we were talking about that was, what are daily things or weekly things you do to improve yourself as a leader and to challenge yourself?
Yeah, so I wake up around 5. I always tell people there's different modules of time. You're 168. Your 168 is your hours in a week, obviously. And I have the sacred time. So my 5 to 8 is kind of a sacred routine that I kind of do that kind of centers myself. So one, just kind of having different devotion books. I'm in the book with James Allen right now, As a Man Thinketh. Just a great reminder of the power of our thoughts and how it manifests in our life. And then I go to the gym, I work out, I hit the sauna, I hit the hot tub. I make sure I kind of get all my pore sweat out. And it's like you have clarity of what's going on in your world. Just you get kind of a thought to do, a thing to say, a person to remind, somebody to text to encourage. And then I go into my daddy duties and I kind of get ready for my day. And I'm big on, my first thought is not to go do something. My first thought is, are we following our strategic plan? You know, so one of my leaders, he's taking a weekend retreat cabin this weekend for the first quarter. So I made some adjustments where me and my wife had to do a detox for 2 days. We did that. I'm doing executive leadership training with our core four. I'm doing it on the end of the month, on the 28th. So every quarter. So for me, it's like, are we in line with the strategy as far as being focused? Because it's good to know leadership. It's good to have leadership. But is it a priority in our organization that we actually have it in the calendar? Like, it's blocked out. Like, you cannot move it. And one of the other things that we do, separate on my day-to-day, is that we have marriage wellness every Monday. I said, if we're executives, and we have values where we believe in taking care of our household and our families, what are we going to work real hard and our marriage fall apart? So every morning, we take the time to make sure that we're doing a devotional for our marriages and that we're seeing each other as people first so that trust can be built in the organization thereafter, right? And so it starts with us, you know what I mean? So if we see people as they are, as quality human beings, and then they're going to see us in return the same way. And that energy, that spirit, that ethos is going to flow through the organization.
Yeah, I love that. That's really cool you do that marriage devotional. That's fun. I think that's awesome.
Every Monday morning.
Yeah, very cool. You mentioned earlier when we were talking about your basketball career, how you learned really quickly that talent is not enough, right? It takes more than that. You have to be a team. I wonder if you could share some things you do both at your company as well as when you're coaching other leaders to encourage teamwork and to help teams come closer together.
Yeah, I wanted to share this too, man. From an HR perspective, one thing that I took on, man, I took on the three C's. This is something that I came up with from experience, right? When I bring somebody onto my team, I do it in three ways. I do character, I do commitment, and then I do competence. The competence part really is, do they have a quality set, not necessarily a skill set? Because I can teach that for the most part, particularly when we're talking about doing service to people, and I can teach you how we do what we do, but I can't teach character.
Yeah.
I can't teach commitment. I can't teach the quality of a value system that you have. So it's like, before, like, so many people make decisions or they tick off a box on a resume, but if I'm bringing them inside my team, what type of person are they? Because one person can shift the whole energy in a team. And so for me, what I've learned, I used to, hey, I need a person to do this, I'm just going to hire that person. I may do that from a VA perspective, but when I'm bringing a person inside my team, the first thing before we even get to breaking down the skill set is, do they have the character? Do they have commitment? And do they have the qualities of competence of just a good person that can translate well when you're recruiting in the basketball space? A scout evaluation from one level to the next, high school to college, college to pro, is we look for transferable assets. So the same aspect with me looking at a personnel decision to come into my team, do you have transferable assets as it relates to your interpersonal workings that relates well to our company and our organization, our team? And so when I make that type of decision as a leader, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that we talk a ton about that in our organization. We usually use the words character trust and competence trust, right? And it's not our responsibility to train character trust, right? We're going to try to find that. We're going to try to hire people who already have that character built in. Our responsibility is the competency trust, right? We want to make sure you already have a base set of, as you said, qualities, and then we can add and teach you the skills. And, yeah. And so I really love that concept. Tell me, what kind of things do you look for when you're trying to hire someone who has that character, who's someone who's going to be committed? What are some of the things you do to find out if that's someone that you can put that character trust into?
First of all, you kind of look at what they put on their resume. Right. You can kind of tell if a person have subconsciously an achievement culture or a character culture just in their subconscious DNA. Right. Do they put what they do for the nonprofit organization as something that they value when it's come to additional activities? And then how long were they there? Is everything they've been through been 6 months, 8 months? That shows. Yeah. But they say, hey, man, I've been part of this from 2011 to present. Like, I love to see 2008 to present, 2014 to present. It's like, man, you're loyal, you're committed. When you get a part of something, you stick it out. So through the rough patches, because I don't want you to just be with me during the good times. I want to see that you, when the storm comes, then you hang in. So a lot of times on the resume side, what they put and how they frame it lets me know what type of value system they have first and foremost. During the interview process, you just structure questions that are way that tells me about the person and not necessarily about how they would do a job, about conflict and how they would respond, you know what I mean, about something that was challenging, how they would solve a problem. Do they mind doing something outside their job description, right? So it's important that, you know, you just word questions in a way that's not necessarily so technical, but more about troubleshooting, bottlenecking, things of that nature, that would say what type of person would, and just seeing their knee-jerk reaction. And sometimes people can, you know what I mean, can sway you here and there. And then the third part is the character references, you know, really grilling people about who the person is and why, you know, why they're not with you or why you recommend them so much. That's kind of like the three-prong approach, sorry.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think even sometimes I've noticed the threat of reference, not to put it strongly that way, but just saying, hey, we're going to need references right from the get-go weeds people out from even applying. Right. Yeah. I think that's great. You talked about the importance of coaches helping you see your blind spots, sore spots, and dark spots. Talk to me about how you do that for the leaders that you coach, right. And how you teach them to do it for their team members.
Yeah, it's actually not as easy as it sounds. You know, I'm learning that. But I've been a leader and I've been exhausted. I've been a leader and I've been pissed. I've been a leader and I've been lonely. I think the first and foremost that helps me as a coach to leaders is I've been one, right? One way, all you're worried about is payroll. And like, everybody's worried about lunchtime and everybody's worried about doing some extra hours. And you're like, I got to come up with $30,000 in 2 weeks just to pay everybody. And that doesn't include me, right? And so I've been a leader who had to just work for years of just making payroll. I've been a leader who had to be years of pushing a board to see the vision that would increase cash flow and decrease expenses and come up with some creativity in the marketplace. Like I've been in that seat. So now that I'm in this seat, I'm seeing leaders and I know what the frustration is like. I know what the staff is not understanding, what you're stressing about and you're getting home and you're getting beat up when you get home. Like, I know what all that is like. So first of all, I'm very aware and sensitive to that fact. Secondly, I understand that when you're pushing a vision, you're missing operations, right? And so for me, I make sure that I don't not only just support them and help them understand what they're trying to execute, but I go to all the staff. I have my one-on-ones. I have my little silos. I have my little meeting that's not a meeting. You know what I mean? You know, random interactions. But I'm doing diagnostics. I'm doing evaluations. I'm doing checks and balances. And so I take that and say, how do we get there? How did they end up there? Why do they have that interpretation? Because I know his intent, or I know her intent. I know the visionary's intent, but that's not necessarily the staff's interpretation. And where is the gaps? And what? So for me, I kind of make sure I'm clear what they are. And then I bring it back up to them, not to report someone, but help them to see gaps, to say, what do you think we should do here? Put it back on them. And then sometimes they'll ask me, hey, Chris, what do you think? And the good ones, you know, you can't have buy-in unless you get weigh-in, right? And so you want to make sure as a leader that I'm around somebody who's even coachable to receive feedback. You know, one of the things that we do, we call fearless feedback, is that if we have fundamental trust, where we don't have artificial harmony, but we have authentic harmony in our organization, then that means you are willing to take fearless feedback and consider it for what we're seeing, for what we're dealing with. But if I'm just going to be getting along to get along, and I'm just here for formality with this meeting, then you're not going to get authentic harmony or fearless feedback from me. I'm going to tell you what you want to hear, because I know when I say something that you don't want to hear, you're going to do whatever you want to do anyway. And so it's important to have leaders who have a trust, who have a willingness to be even receive coaching. And now I can do a work that's very effective for both of us, where I'm giving you real-time feedback, real-time diagnostics, what type of small, slight pivots, adjustment we need to make. You know, when I came in here in this organization, I didn't know that I would have to fire, you know, 80% of the staff. That wasn't my goal. It was, what's our capacity? What's our infrastructure? Challenge the people. But because he was pushing so hard, he didn't know the temperament. He didn't know where they were. He didn't know that they was exhausted. He didn't know that someone was burnt out. It wasn't even something that was bad. It was like, no, it's time for me to move on anyway. Like, I've been holding on this thing for a while. Bring some fresh new energy, right? And now our retention rate is really, really, really high, right? People don't even want to leave because we kind of address those gaps. And even though that's a great guy, you know, and I've also been a part of that, losing good people, even though I'm a good person. But it's like, yeah, you're pushing so hard, you're not seeing these spaces. And I'm just fortunate to be with a leader who's very coachable, who respects me a lot, who listens and values my opinion, and we work well together.
Yeah, Chris, you made some really great points for all leaders, but especially for folks who are trying to become a leader in your organization. You know, a lot of times the CEO of the company or the founder is a visionary, and operational excellence may not be their forte. And so something you can do to really help establish yourself as a leader is to help that visionary carry out their vision in the organization through your operational excellence. Napoleon made famous, he would give the battle plans to the generals, and then he would go down to the front lines and see if the frontline soldiers understood the battle plan. And if they didn't, he would go back to the generals and ensure that the generals really understood the battle plan and were communicating that effectively. Chris, I know we're about out of time, so I wanted to give you the final word. What's your best advice for helping to build a winning team?
Yeah, if you want to go, I'll leave you with a quote. If you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. Certain quotes I live by, that's one where I realize, I don't care how talented I am, I can do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it, but I'm not going to go far. And so I realized that humility, right, consideration, empathy, which I really struggled with, was things that I had to study and learn and process and adapt to how I approach working with people so that we can build something that will last, that we can build something that's bigger than us, that we can build something that our children can be the benefit of. And so just a reminder that no matter how great you are, you're only going to go as far as your team. And so you want to be very mindful of how you take care of people, how you build people, and how you lift up people.
Yeah. Wise words from Coach Crump. Coach, tell us, how can our listeners reach you and connect with you and learn more?
Hey, listen, it's very simple, man. CoachCrump.com. You know, it has everything you need on there, all of my social media platforms. If you want to book me to come and speak and train at your organization, CoachCrump.com. All the info you need. You can even purchase my book from the website. You can make a comment. Reach out to me on social media. I love to engage. But yeah, CoachCrump.com.
Awesome. Well, Chris, it's been great to have you on the show today. We're so grateful for all the wonderful work you're doing to build winning teams across the country, and we wish you the best of luck.
All right. Thanks, Jordan. I appreciate it.